Hello, MonsterVine.com readers and Indie Complete listeners. This is Kyle Heist, host of Indie Complete, and I'm here at the Tribeca Games Festival in New York, and I'm joined by Robin Haneke of Phenomena.
That's right. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm doing quite well. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I was a little hungover this morning when I woke up, but I'm recovering.
I'm jet-lagged. But Phenomena is a development studio with designers from games like Journey, Flower, Nobi Nobi Boy, and Katamari. And here at Tribeca, you, Robin, spoke about creating delight and joy in VR, including through your upcoming title, Luna. For listeners, can you tell us a bit more about your studio, Luna, and why VR?
Sure. So the studio is located in San Francisco. I moved back to San Francisco after finishing Journey. I was executive producer of Journey. And myself and my co-founder, Martin Middleton, decided to start a little company in San Francisco to make experimental games. And specifically, we wanted to make games that were about engaging in new technologies. We're both kind of tech nerds, and like I have a background in computer science, and Martin is a programmer. So we really wanted to make experimental games for experimental technologies, because we felt that that would give us permission to, and kind of sort of inspire us to, push the boundaries a little bit harder with the experiences that we were making. So the other thing that we wanted to do is build a diverse environment, and sort of we've been working a lot on trying to figure out how to build what you would call a deliberately developmental working environment, where creative people can come in and have a lot of different experiences, express themselves, and then a lot of times people kind of end up going off and doing other things outside the studio. And the reason that we named it Phenomena was because we wanted it to be a phenomena. We wanted it to be a place where people could come in, do some great work, and then go off and do great work out there in the games industry. So kind of like a little bit of a battery that generates interesting ideas that can then go forward, even if we personally aren't going to work on them or we're not necessarily interested in that vector. So we're in our fifth year now as a company, and we have already shipped a title actually for the Tango phone, which is a Lenovo Fab 2 Pro phone. It's called World, and Keita, who did Nobi Nobi Boy and Katamari, was the designer on that. If you have a Fab 2, or if you want to like look at a cool AR phone experience, that's actually available now. In fact, it's nominated for an I/O award, so we're really excited. Yeah, I'm hoping that we win, but we'll see. That's next week. But then we're also working on another title called Luna, which originally actually started off as a straight PC game, and we're actually going to release it as a PC title because we designed it to be a PC title at first, and it is gorgeous and beautiful in 2D, as we say. But about halfway through the production, we ended up getting access to some touch controllers through friends at Oculus, and we ported the game to the Oculus Touch, and immediately we're like, wow, seeing the game in 2D, it looks like the game that I designed, but seeing the game in VR, it feels like the world I imagined, you know? And so we really love the idea of being able to sort of see how traditional PC game design is influenced by VR game design, and how VR game design is influenced by traditional PC game design, and over the course of the project have just been kind of experimenting with thinking about different input controls, scenarios and schemas, and then also thinking about how the physical body engages with a game. You learn to see the game through so many different lenses when you're working on a PC and VR title that it's just really, really exciting.
During your talk, I'll come back to this question, but just to kind of touch on what you mentioned about input controls, I really liked what you were saying about a power grip versus a paintbrush. Yeah. But I want to talk about it in a second. I have a question leading into that, though. You and your teammates' background is heavy in like unique and risk-taking games in terms of their experience, their beauty, and the feeling players take away from them. How does VR as a medium open up these ideas?
Well, I think that one of the most compelling things about virtual reality experiences, and honestly, just like any augmented reality experience, whether it's VR, AR, or like immersed reality, is that you can completely change what people expect. I think we've gotten pretty used to the way that we see games on a television screen or on a PC. We've learned to kind of think about UI a certain way. We've learned to think about engagement a certain way. The phone actually did change some of that. Like when we moved to the phone, we did get some new paradigms like tilting and swiping and stuff, which is now different, you know, multi-input. But you kind of even see it on the phone that a lot of times we end up kind of looping back to the things we're really good at already instead of really expanding the mind and trying to do new things. And the thing about Luna is that when you see this little world in front of you and your hands are touching it, you can have all these interactions that are they're similar to the kinds of ways that you would play with, say, Playmobil toys or like, you know, blocks, but at the same time they can be totally enhanced and made to be musical, and they can have like sparkles and glitter and all this like lovely stuff that comes off them, and you can really zoom in and zoom out because your head is the camera. So there's a lot of really different affordances in a virtual space compared to, you know, sitting in front of your computer playing the game, or, you know, sitting next to a table playing with those toys. It kind of combines the best of both worlds. So I think there's just a lot of new ways to approach how we process information and how we put information into the game world in these sort of hand-tracked environments, whether it's virtual reality or augmented reality, because eventually it's going to all kind of become the same thing. You'll have a headset, it'll follow your hands, you'll be able to use your hands to touch things. That kind of engagement is so different. It's really a lot closer to theater design or designing toys or designing, you know, a meal than it is to designing a game, because there's so many different tactile and like physical qualities to the experience.
And with that in mind, can you kind of paint us a picture of what a player would be seeing or doing during, say, stepping into Luna?
Yeah, so at the beginning of Luna, you'll see a little bit of backstory about this bird character who is actually growing up in Golden Gate Park. The whole game is set in the California coast. And the bird is actually convinced by this owl to swallow the last piece of the waning moon. And when that happens, it's the first time the moon has ever disappeared from the sky. So there's a storm and the bird is blown off course. And when it wakes up, it can't quite remember how to get home. So what you're doing is you engage with the bird in this kind of abstract space to open and then solve these star puzzles, which are basically like Tangled, Cat's Cradle type puzzles, where you're moving the stars out of their scrambles and back into alignment, and then they reveal shapes. After you've finished sort of finding all the shapes, you then take those shapes and use them to plant a terrarium and bring it back to life. So you can take trees and plants, lily pads, and you put them down into the space, and as you build out the space, it comes alive, and little things happen. Like you'll see, like there's little frogs, and then the frogs jump from lily pad to lily pad. If they bump into each other, then tadpoles appear in the water and stuff like that. So it's really about bringing the world back to life through your creativity. And that takes about, you know, on average, it takes about 20 minutes for someone to sort of build a terrarium that they're really comfortable with, that they love. You can sculpt the trees and change their colors, and everything makes sounds. So a lot of times people will stop and use their hands to play musical sounds in the space. And then when they feel the terrarium is complete, they can go down inside of it and see the narrative unfold on the stage that they just built. So the bird actually throughout the game will interact with other characters that it's drawn to, or that it helps draw out of the environments, who have also swallowed a piece of the moon. And so the bird slowly helps the moon wax. And so the story is really about why does the moon disappear and reappear every month, right? But it's actually, when you get below that, it's a little bit about the idea that sometimes we do things just because it seems like a good idea at the time, and it turns out it wasn't, and we call those mistakes. And a lot of times I think video games are about getting revenge or going back in time and undoing mistakes, but that's not really how it works in real life. A lot of times you just have to kind of cope with your mistakes and cope with the decisions that you've made, and maybe it wasn't such a mistake after all, right? Like if every mistake is learning, then really mistakes are just pieces of you that you haven't found yet. And so I think what we really wanted to do was build a game about those kinds of ideas, like how when you feel uneasy in your belly, like if you have a scramble in your belly, which is kind of the metaphor in the game, that's really common and it's really normal. I was just here earlier, I was talking to someone after my talk, and they said, "I'm sorry, I have social anxiety," when they were waiting in line. He's like, the conversation I had in line was way more exciting than the one I'm having with you right now. It was so adorable. And I said, you know, I have it too. We all get it. I mean, everybody gets nervous. When I get up on stage, I feel nervous in my stomach to talk to people and be up there talking about what I do. It's nerve-wracking. So, you know, this idea that we're all carrying around something, and learning to let that go and accept it and become aware of it as just part of the process that became, you know, helped us become who we are is really important.
And can you talk about, it's kind of a side question that's kind of percolating in my brain here, but when you're designing a game, are you designing in regards to Luna and virtual reality, are you designing for an experience you're hoping to lead them to, or are you designing an experience you want them to have their own kind of takeaway from it? And along with that, can you talk about how the controls as well add into that? You mentioned the power grip versus the brush motion in the game.
Yeah. So I think when we started working on the game, we were working actually with Intel on the RealSense camera, and we were thinking about how do your hands interact with the space. If you could really reach out and touch a game, you know, by having your hands tracked in front of a forward-facing camera from the computer, what would that be like? And as we started working on that, that was actually what led us naturally to hand-track controllers in VR, was this idea that we're so interested in hands. And the first time that I actually held controllers, I realized that the controllers we've designed so far have a power grip. So basically you put your hand around them like you would, say, if you were going to grab a hammer, the handle of a hammer. That motion of grabbing something like that is immediately tenses your arms and your shoulders and your back, you know, in a specific way that is related to the fact that a fist is a very powerful object and all of your muscles are engaged. There's a reason that we make a fist before we punch someone else, right? Because it distributes not only the surface tension of the hand, but it also engages all these muscles. Whereas if you think about picking up a pen or a paintbrush or a conductor's wand, the motion that you make is more like you take your index finger and your middle finger and you put them against your thumb, and that's a precision grip. And so there's a reason that paintbrushes and pens are designed the way they are, and there's a reason that artists feel the way they feel when they draw, because your hand is actually engaged in a very specific way. It's a much lighter motion. It barely even engages your wrist and your elbow. I mean, if you do conducting, it pulls your whole arm, but the motion, if you think of the motion of conducting, is so smooth and fluid. And so a lot of what we've been doing actually in VR is thinking about, okay, well, we have this new controller, unlike a mouse or a controller, like a traditional game controller, you could give someone this feeling of the precision grip. Like, how do we do that? And so a lot of what we've been working on is iterating the model of the hand in the game so that it really reinforces this idea of light brush-like touches. So it's kind of like a paintbrush that is prehensile. It has its own fingers in a way. And if, in fact, actually, we're kind of finalizing that model right now. We've been showing the game with a sort of a version of the hand that was just temp that we just put in because we wanted to put something in. And so the final hands have not been seen yet. And they're actually working on the back of the studio right now. And I'm really excited to go back and see the way they look.
And I'm curious, I think by launching on PC and PC VR kind of answers my question, but I'm still curious. How is VR adoption going? Like you mentioned, you did a raise of hands during the talk of who's experienced it so far. And how can indie developers survive the early adoption period of VR while the install numbers are below a critical mass, if that's still the case?
Well, so actually, I think what we're seeing is that for someone like me, you know, someone asked me recently, like, how many millions of units of Luna do you want to sell? And I actually laughed out loud. It's terrible. I'm a terrible CEO because someone asked me that in a business context. And I'm like, I don't know, like one, you know. So when you think about traditional games, like big games like The Sims, which I worked on, or even Boom Blocks, you know, yeah, you know that those games are coming out from a giant publisher and they're going to sell millions of units. That's expected. For an indie, like, to sell a million units of anything is amazing. So the install base right now can clearly handle that kind of scale in terms of, like, if you did, you know, 10 to 15% on the current install bases, you'd probably be able to cover your burn rate at your studio for a few months, right? So it's smart, I think, to kind of do what we did, which is we started with the PC title, and then we were like, can we support VR? Yes, we can. Like, Luna is a PC game that supports VR. Like, and the VR experience is beautiful, but the PC experience is also beautiful. And Austin Wintry's amazing, beautiful score is going to be in both versions of the game, right? You buy the game, you get both versions. If you get a headset, you can give it a shot. You know, it's much better, I think, to sort of approach it that way. One of the things that happens with new technologies is that if they don't have a huge install base, is that people tend to think, well, we can't invest in content for those platforms because they're so small. But if you think about ranging the content to that platform and building a ramp for yourself onto the platform as the platform grows, I think it can be a very successful business model. Now, I'm saying that. I don't know if that's true. You know, when Luna comes out in the fall, if it does really well, that'll be fantastic. And if it doesn't, well, I guess you can hire me, you know, look me up. that. But I do believe that the problem with a sort of short-sighted mindset with respect to content is that you get a lot of experiences that are one-offs. They're kind of joke games, or they're like, they're fun for a minute because they show off the technology, but they don't really engage. And, you know, Luna is a story-based driven, it's a story-driven puzzle game with a lot of creativity and sort of musical gameplay in it, because that's the kind of game I like to build. I like to build games that have physical simulation and that have a kind of whimsy and beauty that, you know, like something like Journey or Flower. You know, Flower was hugely inspirational to me as a developer long before I actually worked on Journey. You know, I think those kinds of games are really great. So VR is exceptionally tuned to deliver that kind of a story-based experience, I think. And so I think it's really about just like us being brave and taking the risks. If you build something really lovely for a new technology and it transforms the way people think about your medium, then it will sell. Like, I do believe it's possible to sell those kinds of games.
I mentioned this before we started recording, but your talk was very fascinating to me. It could have been twice as long and I would have sat through it very easily. But you mentioned at one point a VR experience you had that made you realize the responsibility you hold with the images and experiences you put players into. And you mentioned you want to see more games focused on like things like love and romance and empathy and being conscious of how we interact with each other, saying this is how we increase the peace in general in the world. It's a fascinating point and kind of like a higher purpose for developers that they could tap into. Can you tell me how you're approaching doing this now and into the future, bearing in mind the industry's, you know, industries with things like discrimination within its own culture?
Yeah, actually someone else asked me about this earlier today, and what I said and what I really believe is that the technology itself is very powerful. It allows you to see things that are being presented to you as if they're in your own world. So if you experience something in your own world that's extremely scary or extremely violent, then you're going to have that memory in your head. And when you look at that space in your living room, you're going to relive that experience until you put something else there. And it's very similar to real world memory. Like, my experiences in augmented reality and virtual reality have been that, like, the places feel real. They feel compelling and the experiences seem real. And so we have to start really having, I think, a public dialogue about what our responsibility is as developers and as filmmakers and as media creators and as artists and as citizens. What are the kinds of things that we want to put in front of each other? How do we want to shape each other's understanding of humanity and our memories of living? I really believe that everyone is doing the best they can. And I think the games industry is doing the best that it can right now. I think that when we look at social media, I think a lot of people are doing the best that they can. But I think we can do better. I mean, I think we can be more empathetic towards one another. We can understand each other's experiences more, just with more empathy. And I think that games, and in particular VR games, can help us do that. I think they can help us learn what it feels like to be walking down the street and microaggressed and told to smile because we're pretty. They can tell us what it feels like to be walking through the picket lines at a clinic trying to get in and get services. I mean, there are experiences like that right now. So, you know, when you think about the possibility of technology, I think, you know, like I said, we really love at Phenomena working on experimental platforms, working very closely with, you know, Google and Intel and Microsoft and Facebook. Like, we really love working with these really huge companies who are trying to build new technologies, because we feel like we bring this perspective of, well, what else? What else could we be doing? And we do it from this conscious position of trying to be inclusive and trying to enable new voices and new experiences. We're not the only people that can do that. I mean, anyone listening to this podcast right now could, in theory, figure out a way to build something for VR that tells their own story in a way that helps other people understand them better. If we were all doing that, then the world would be a more peaceful place. And I really do believe that. You know, if we are all really honest about what we're carrying around, if we all really do acknowledge that humanity is good, people are good. Like, if you get sick, you can go to a hospital and someone will take care of you. You know, if, you know, Maureen mentioned this earlier in the talk. She said, if you saw a little child sitting on a bench alone crying, you would walk over to them and help them. Like, you are a good person. Everyone is good. And I think it's important for us to really amplify that message right now, because we're in a dark place in society right now, and you know, globally on the planet, we have so many pressing issues. It's important for our media and our art to really represent those issues in new ways and get people to understand that we have to be together as a society, as a community of people on the planet, in order to continue being here.
That's awesome. I totally couldn't agree more. That kind of wraps up all my questions there. I really super appreciate that. For people that want to keep an eye on Phenomenon and what you guys are doing, where can they keep an eye on everything?
Yeah, you can see us on Twitter at Phenomena and www.funomena.com. Da-da-da-da-da.
Perfect. And you can catch the post on Monster Vine as well with all the links, and we'll put the trailer up for Luna as well. Thanks so much.
Thanks a lot.